Welcome back to The Bookshelf. I'm Caleb Mannin, continuing the reading of my 2015 novel, Bust It Like a Mule, The Tale of Cotton King Fisher. Chapter 23. Cotton's mouth is flying open every time he bends his elbow as he is eating and yapping at the table as the kids play near the water when he hears Elsa Mason say, "My, my, will you look at that?" And he looks up to see who do you by God think J.L. Carter, the Stumptown police captain's daughter, switch-hipping on out to the lake with a few of her girlfriends in a damn stripy bathing suit of all things, with her bare shoulders and her gams glistening, and Fred Mason says, "Are you kidding me? How does that girl always know where this man is? As if he has tried his damnedest, but God just ain't helping him out here." And Cotton goes tongue-tied, and the damnedest thing is that he stands up from the picnic table as if he was standing to attention. And Mason says, "Sit down and stay out of trouble." And Elsa says, "Fred, she is the prettiest girl around. I don't know how you expect him to stay away from that." As she nods at JL switch-hipping and smiles, because she likes the idea of love, and she loves her husband. And she can see her husband likes the Cotton man a great deal, though he is rougher than a cob. And this makes her love her husband even more for liking such a man and sticking up for him. So, and she thinks, my, wouldn't it be lovely to get Cotton and JL all hitched up. So she is planning out a wedding before JL even sees them all, for it is just the way women are, and you and I both know it, by God. "At least play it cool," Fred gives in just a bit, and Cotton sits down like the boss is right. And Mason hands him a beer to hide behind, but goddammit, Elsa waves JL on over, and Mason just shakes his head like he don't like the order, but he's obeying it like his Navy days. JL sees him, and she brings a couple of younger girls over to the table, and they ain't nothing compared to her in her stripy bathing suit with bare brown shoulders and a hint of breasts, sweet Lord, and those legs and hips and her black hair pulled back in a band that matches her suit. Cotton wants to mime like he is shaking a salt shaker on his hand, then bite his hand like it is a steak, like he has seen the old hobos do when they see a pretty girl. But he knows this is not the right thing to do, especially after he kissed this girl's neck like a honeybee to honeysuckle, so he just squints up at her into the big sun from where he is sitting next to Fred at a picnic table like a roughneck, and swigs his beer bare-chested and says, "Hey, girl." And it comes off a little smoky sexy to the rest of everyone, and they wonder if something has happened between these two and old man up above. Which we all know has, but they don't know, so we don't tell either. That's Cotton's tale to tell, and JL's tale as well, and I guess and I know this is Cotton's story, but I am kind of partial to JL myself, like a sister, if you must know. "Hi," JL says, sweet-like. Honey the bee makes after the honeysuckle. And now everyone is really wondering what in the hell happened between these two, an old man up above, the local girl, and the mean cuss, rowdy-ass, violent, bull, mule, ball-breaker drifter. Then Fred Mason jumps in. "Come down for a swim? The water is nice." "Yes, if you like ice cubes," says Elsa, and the girls laugh. "I like your bathing suit," Elsa says to JL, by God calling attention to her amazing form on purpose. Cotton and Mason both think, and JL gets all kind of bashful and says, "Oh, thank you, I made it myself." And Cotton takes a gander, and he will be damned. She sure is good with her hands. She does it all, and Fred Mason sort of nudges him like, "Don't poke your eye out." But Cotton thinks Mason is telling him to speak up, so he speaks up. "Damn, that's good work, sugar. It fits you like a glove." And JL's friends giggle, and Elsa raises her eyebrows, and Mason rubs his hands over his mouth and jaw, and JL blushes and says, "Why, thank you, Cotton." And Cotton can see everyone is wondering what to say next, and he don't give a damn, for that bathing suit runs right along her curves like the going to the sun road runs right along the mountains. Sleek and smooth, and you gotta take that road slow or else you'll topple over the edge. And he is proud of JL for making that suit like it was no damn thing, just like her paintings and that mug, what she made him. So he says, "Want a beer?" And she says, "Sure, thanks." And he grabs one from the cooler and church keys it for her, and it cracks open on him. And he hands it to her, and their fingers touch on the ice-cold glacier can. And he folds his brawny-ass oak arms over his bare chest and watches her take a drink. "You girls can lay out here if you'd like," Elsa says. "I've got a lot of magazines, and I need some feminine company after these two," and nods at Fred and Cotton. "Thanks a lot," Cotton jokes, and Elsa says, "Oh, Cotton, it was a compliment. You're like 10 men. And now he gets a bit bashful, and Mason says, "Let's go get in the water, Samson. It's hotter than hell around here." And he does not mean because of the big sky, big sun, so he and Cotton take fresh beers into the lake and stand with their balls under the water, drinking beer and trying not to shiver. JL's friends lay out with Elsa, but JL don't, of course, as Fred Mason says, but she, by God, wades hip switch wide out into the lake after Fred and Cotton, making the water ripple out away from her hips, and she brings her beer with like it ain't nothing. Well, hell, she ain't got nuts to freeze off, Cotton thinks, but he admires her spunk just the same. "How's it going out here?" she asks, and Fred says, "Amazing. I love this place. JL, how long you lived here?" "All my life." "You ever think about leaving?" Cotton asks, and she shakes her head. "No, this is the land where the world began." And Cotton knows she is talking just to him, though Fred Mason don't. "Has Terry Clay been bothering you?" Fred asks her a sudden, and Cotton is surprised by this, though he likes that Mason just comes out and by God ask it. And he respects his boss friend, Fred Mason, and JL says, "He's tried to talk to me a few times." "About Cotton?" "About the whole thing, yeah." "I think you should stay away from him if you're hanging out with Cotton," Fred says. "They don't have a whole lot of love for each other, and I'd hate to see this place wrecked and lose a good man, if you get my meaning." And Cotton can see he's trying to appeal to the girl's sensitivities, and he would be angry with another man for talking about him so to a girl while he stands right there. But it is Fred Mason, and he likes Fred Mason a great deal, goddamn Yankee or no, so he don't care none. "I understand, Fred," JL says. "I guess I just don't like Terry bullying me about what I can and can't do." "That makes a lot of sense. Just be careful. I like the both of you mighty fine." Then Mason wades back to the shore with, "I'm freezing me lower extremities off." And when he gets back to shore, he sits by Elsa and watches the two in the water, and he worries just a touch. For he knows what not everyone else does is the men he called in Oregon said not only was Cotton good at saving men in the Tillamook burn and the war, but he also was real good at killing them as well when push came down to goddamn shove. Chapter 24. Cotton and JL swim in the glacier water like it ain't even cold because they don't by God feel it. And Elsa Mason would say it's because those two are melting the whole damn glacier, and she fans herself to make the point, but Mason says to by God cut it out, he gets it already. Big Sky, Crow Girl's wet, caramel skin with hints of white in all the right places is almost too much for old Cotton. And likewise, she likes his bare, wet, scarred, big sun-smelling skin as well. So they flirt in the water and graze limbs beneath the surface of the lake, even when the Mason kids come out to play with them. And Cotton thinks it might be fine to have a JL wife in Montana with Montana children, and work fires in the summer and snow in the winter. And JL thinks it might be nice to have a Forest Service husband who ain't Terry Clay and who is Cotton King Fisher, and have little Cotton cusses and play in the lakes in the summer and stay indoors in the winter. At one point, Cotton grabs that girl's waist under the water to tease her, and she don't push him away, and his busting hands stay on the saddles of her hips, on her wet, stripy, homemade bathing suit. And if it weren't for being in broad daylight, not that Cotton usually cares about that sort of thing, they'd have kissed hard and maybe more. He runs his rough stock thumbs along the edge of her hips through the bathing suit, and JL looks right into his diamond eyes with her flathead lake blue eyes as he does this, and it is the most beautiful pain Cotton Kingfisher has ever known to have a girl look into him so. Then JL rides piggyback on him in the water, chasing them Mason children, though this ain't proper, and Cotton feels her wet breasts and thighs against him, and he fears she will hear his heart in his chest, going like a jackhammer that he worked in the city because he is always the strongest man on the crew. "Let's swim across the lake," JL says after a bit, and Cotton says, "Damn, girl, that's a long ways." And she says, "You chicken?" And this is all he needs, and he starts swimming like his old lifeguard days across the cold blue mountain runoff. He busts it breaststroke with his head down like he ain't never, and the water is in his ears and nose bubbling up, and he catches a glimpse of the mountains as he comes up and goes back down, and he realizes he is in deep, dark, knife-cold water, and he is halfway out to nowhere. He thinks war and the water thoughts, though the water then was warm, and he thinks of his mama down below him looking up with animal sad eyes, and he loses his steam and stops and treads water trying to get his air. He can see JL coming up behind him strong, and he is panting like a dog-tired dog, and it is from the water thoughts, and he does not want to look down because hell's bells it has come to Jesus deep, and God knows what is down there, maybe even his mama. JL sees him and pulls up and treads water, and Cotton hollers at her, "Let's head on back." "Fine, chicken, let's race." And JL heads back, and Cotton catches a nice shot of her backside heading back, and he lets her beat him back, for he likes her backside in that bathing suit, and he ain't got the spunk no more to bust it back after them water thoughts caught him like a shiv up under the ribs. They come out of the water close to one another, and Cotton is done with this damn charade of not touching her. He feeling raw nerved from his rib shiv water thoughts, like, why would the earth do that to me when I was just getting ahead of steam? So he puts his arm around JL's bare shoulders, and JL nestles up under his brawny arm. She doesn't even know anything was wrong. JL's girlfriends head out, and the Masons pack up, while JL and Cotton stand in their towels, hemming and hawing, not wanting to leave off just yet. And Cotton gets all morose-like, like he won't ever get to see JL's Garden of Eden curves and that dripping like water from the glaciers running into the lake's stripy bathing suit again, by God. As the Masons leave, the children say goodbye to the friendly bear, and Mason says to Cotton, "You want to come home with us?" And Cotton says no, though he knows Mason is trying to keep him out of JL trouble. And Elsa says, "JL, you should come out real soon, and we could have Cotton over and have a barbecue." And Fred Mason rubs his mouth and jaw like it's an order he don't want to obey, but he is obeying it, by God, just like his Navy days. And JL says, "That sounds lovely." And Elsa says, "I'll telephone you." Then stands on her tiptoes and kisses Cotton on the cheek and says, "Thanks for being sweet to the children and putting up with my husband. Oh, and I don't think you're a bad man at all. I don't see what all the fuss is about." Cotton feels kind of sensitive-like, like the earth really does love him. Damn them water thoughts. And Elsa is a sweet, red-headed American lake spirit that is telling him the earth loves him. And he wants to cry like Elsa is his mama's sister, but he don't. He just kisses her back on the cheek and thanks her. Then Mason punches his shoulder and shakes his hand and says, "I'll see you on Monday, Bull. JL, keep him out of trouble, will you?" And she says, of course she will. What else? Then JL and Cotton are left on the lakeshore in towels and wet suits, and the big sun is headed down toward the big mountains to bed down for the night. "What now?" JL asks. And Cotton is glad she does, for he thought she might want to go home, and he says, "Let's go on up to the lodge. I'll buy you dinner." And she says, "Like a date?" And he is sick of this damn dumb charade, so he says, "Hell yeah, sister." And she likes a swagger, so she says, "But I don't have anything to wear." And he says, "That's the best part." She don't even try to act scandalized. She just laughs and says, "Oh my." Real sassy-like. And Cotton says, "I got my t-shirt. You can throw that on." And she says, "What will you wear?" "Well, I got a work shirt in the truck." So they go to the lodge restaurant looking like, by God, hoodlums. JL still showing her amazing legs under Cotton's white t-shirt. Cotton don't want to call them gams in his mind no more, for it seems a crying shame to disrespect them so. And Cotton looks goddamn ridiculous in his cut-off work pants shorts and bare legs and unlaced work boots and a work shirt over his bare chest with his rattlesnake rattler necklace. and his hair kind of crazy, like, but not too crazy, for he fixed it with the comb and the truck, because he don't like his hair out of place, like we know. The people in the restaurant are a little put off, because it is a pretty nice place, being a tourist trap and all. Cotton wonders why the hell men are wearing suit jackets when they're supposed to be camping, by God, but they are. Some of the workers to whom Cotton's reputation has proceeded as a buck-hard worker lead him and J.L. to a nice table, and there is even a candle lit, and they sit down looking water-fresh like American Indian Glacier Blue Lake spirits. "I haven't been on a date in a while," J.L. says, and Cotton says, "Hell, I ain't never, J.L." And J.L. likes the way he says her name and the way he says he's never been on a date with but her, even though she has horse sense and knows that a charmer like Cotton has seen plenty of girls and more. Though what she don't know is that what Cotton says is true. He's never taken a girl on a proper date but her. Chapter 25. Cotton tells J.L. to order what she wants, for he is a working man, and he knows that money is gone tomorrow, and loving it is the root of all evil, and it all burns when you die anyhow, or some other holy rolling thing, so it might as well be gone today. He did not ponder on money thoughts, though, because when it comes to a girl like J.L., with the shape of a fiddle tempting a man like the fruit of good and evil, money just don't matter none. J.L. orders fried trout and Cotton a steak, by God, and he gets a beer, not just any beer, but the champagne beer that is his most favorite. And he makes J.L. order real champagne, the blonde bubbly, though she says it is too fancy. She can tell he don't give a good goddamn, and like any woman, she likes it when a good man bosses her and she don't have to worry none. And I suppose this is on account of women having some of men's rib in 'em. Cotton thinks she looks mighty sexy in his t-shirt turned wet from her bathing suit in all the right places, and eating her trout like a real lady. And he knows his manners ain't good, though he tries, by God, and he says, "Sorry about my etiquette. It ain't what it should be," though he's never apologized about it before, and maybe he shoulda, but all them other girls he's known before didn't matter all that hell of a much to make you want to hold a fork right. No disrespect to them, and Cotton would mean no disrespect to them, that is just the truth. And J.L. goes, "I don't care about that, Cotton," and it's real sweet of her to say so, like the champagne she is sipping. They sit and eat and talk and talk and laugh, and they have a good old time high on the hog. And Cotton may even talk a bit too much about his past a little and tell this girl how he is from Oklahoma, even by God, and how he has wandered for many years like a minor prophet, minor though his prophet in skills may be. And she laughs and asks him about his family, but he don't want to talk about it none. Not that he's being rude, and J.L. knows this. But he just does not want to talk about it all the same. Hell, this is their first date, and she is right polite about it and drops the subject. Cotton ain't never told a girl about his past, sides what they already know about him. But there is something about this blue-eyed, dark-haired girl across from him that makes him drop his dukes a bit, and it feels good not to have to be so all fire bowed up. He likes this girl, and it doesn't hurt no one for him to tell just a bit about being an Okie and all, but he sort of wonders if it is the right thing. But truth be told, he don't know his own right from his own wrong when he talks to this girl, which is the only kind he follows. At the lodge, there is a band playing, and the bowl and the bell do some rug cutting in their crazy get-ups, and they have a gay old time, and Cotton can dance, not just square. And J.L. wants to know where he learns to dance like that, and he said, "If I told you, I'd have to kill you," as they whirl across the floor. Then J.L. gets up and takes the man in the band's guitar, and she, by God, plays it. Cotton slaps his thigh and calls, "Woo-wee," for she plays good, and there ain't one damn thing he has seen that she can't do. And her bare legs are coming out from under the guitar all sexy-like, and Cotton feels for sure he might be in love if ever he was. Then she bosses the band around, and they play, and she plays and sings a song. And Cotton hears her sing, and his heart gets all swole up, or maybe just his throat, but it's a feeling just the same. J.L.'s woman's voice is real good, kind of low and sexy and smooth, By damn, she is amazing, from her head down to her hips, to her toes, to her mug-making, swimsuit-sewing, breakfast-cooking, landscape-painting, guitar-playing, sexy-singing self. After the dancing and singing, they drink the place into closing time, just like they did the bowling alley. And by now, their clothes are dry, and they stumble laughing out into the warm summer black feet wind, and Cotton says, "I'll drive you long as your daddy ain't gonna shoot my ass." And JL says, "He won't, by God." Cotton says, "Damn, girl, you should have been the one in the family that went out to Hollywood. You're amazing. Have you ever thought about busting out?" And JL laughs like it ain't no thing, but it is, and says, "No, I guess not. I always thought I'd stay here. I don't need to go anywhere to be somebody." And hell, this hits our Cotton right in the chest like a bird that flies into a window but can't get inside. They get to Cotton's Forest Service truck, but who should be out in the dark by the truck, by God, but that jackass Terry the Kid. But he ain't no dummy no more in matters of Cotton, for he ain't on his feet. He is in his truck with the window rolled down and the engine a-running, and someone is with him, and he shouts out, "Hey, lovebirds." And JL goes all stiff-like. Cotton can tell she is scared, and he wonders what kind of man Terry must be to make JL flinch so, for she ain't the flinching kind, but as soon as he wonders this, he knows. Cotton don't get his feathers ruffled easy, and he knows he can take whatever Terry can dish out, so he hollers, "Hey, knobhead, why you flapping your gums? Ain't you supposed to be at home in bed with your mama?" And JL has never heard such a thing, so she does a surprised laugh, like she doesn't even want to, but she can't help it. And Terry's head about explodes, for Cotton has seen a man's head explode, and Terry's is getting pretty damn close. Terry Kid revs his engine like he is going to drive toward them, and Cotton moves JL toward the truck. Terry shouts, "Hey, Cotton, she isn't going to be walking down any aisle in white." And Cotton knows that any man that says that about a woman is the one that put her in the black in the first place. So he shouts, "Neither did your mama." And Terry's head explodes, not for real, of course. Just by this, I mean he gets mighty angry and snaps. And he steps on the gas and roars his truck toward Cotton and JL. And Cotton picks up JL and puts her in the back of his truck, then stands right in front of the Terry truck that is driving toward him. He just stands there. What Terry and JL don't know, though I am telling you this, is that Cotton is the wrong man to play chicken with. For once he played a game of chicken with a man who said Cotton had stole his wife. So they got two cars, though Cotton had long since lost his driving license, and drove them real fast at one another dead on. And neither one would swerve, and they ended up wrecking the cars head on like two jackhammers headbutting. Cotton busted his head on the steering wheel, but his head is so mule hard, by God, he broke the steering wheel right back. Cotton got out of the wrecked-up smash car and dragged the other man out of his wrecked-up smash car. Cotton shook the man's hand, and he said, "Any man that wants a woman that bad ought to have her, by God." So he let the man and his wife be, and I hear they are still married and happy in Northern California by the ocean, by God. I say all this to say that as Terry was planning on running Cotton over, Cotton was damned if he was budging. He would rather take a chance on God and his own body and see what was left in his hand after his hand was played. But then he hears JL holler at him, and he thinks, what a goddamn silly way to go. So just as he is about to get hit by this truck, he steps to the side just like he stepped to the side on Terry in that boxing match. And he yells a filthy word like he did that day in the boxing match that JL can't quite make out in the truck roar. He steps to the side and the truck flies past and the mirror nicks him, and he is full of mad mule bull rush rage. So as the bed of the truck goes by him, he throws his shoulder and all his weight into the side of the truck bed so hard that I swear, and JL will say this too, and hell, even Terry will admit it, damn it, that the truck bed was dented clean in, and the truck bounced and shifted to the side so hard a good couple of feet from Cotton's body blow, that it fishtailed, and Terry ran off the road and into a tree with a great wrecking ball crash. JL shouts after Cotton, but he runs to the wrecked truck. And the last time he played chicken, he pulled a man out of a truck to shake his hand. But this time he goes to pull a man out of a wreck to beat him to death. And JL is very afraid, for she does not want any more trouble for Cotton or herself, being as how his strings hum and her curvy body. Cotton bout rips the truck door off its hinges, and he punches Terry, who is still seeing stars from the collision, about the face and head and neck and back. Then Cotton begins to drag him out as he is hitting him and hollering on him, but then the man who is with Terry in the truck says, "That'll be enough." And though the man's voice is warbly scared like a yellow warbler bird, Cotton knows he means it by the way he says it. So Cotton looks up, and the reason this man means it is that he has a gun, and he is pointing it right at Cotton. And Cotton sees that it is the same jackass he beat senseless and left in the tree as a bar brawl crucifix that night at the Grange. And Cotton says, "Well, I'll be a horn-swoggled monkey's uncle." That's all for tonight. You've been hearing my novel, Bust It Like a Mule. I'm Caleb Manon, and have a heap of help from Mike Ailman and Vern Windham, who recorded and edited it. It is a production of Spokane Public Radio for The Bookshelf. Bust It Like a Mule is available on Amazon and Kindle. It is also at some libraries as well as major booksellers, including Auntie's, of course. Oh, and the author's front porch. For original music and more about the book, visit CalebManon.com. Catch you next time. If you've missed any of the episodes, head over to kpbx.org to hear the podcast.